I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have a lot to talk about today. Lots gone on in the last couple of weeks. You know, we've lost some major people, and I wanted to kind of discuss that a little bit. First, I want to say rest in peace, Senator John McCain. He was a man who served his country, both in time of war and as a civilian by holding public office. He's a man who ran for president, and when he did, I supported him. And he's a man who had a life we can all look at and be proud of as Americans. And I'm going to leave it at that. God rest John McCain and bless his family. Next, we lost Aretha Franklin, another true great American who, by her own talents and her skill, enhanced the lives of millions of people. You know, creating a sound of music. Sometimes I think music is underrated when it comes to the human heart and the human soul. Music really does free us. Have you ever listened to a song that was so beautiful it moved you to tears? What is that with the ability to move a human being to the point of tears emotionally because of a song, because of the melody, or maybe it's the words, or a place you were when you first heard it? Music is an amazing thing. And Aretha Franklin was one of the amazing humans who created some tremendous music that moved lots and lots of souls. And the third person, at least we found out we lost her this week, was a young lady we have spoken about here on Chasing Justice. And that's Miss Molly Tibbetts from Iowa. We find out that Molly probably lost her life a couple of weeks ago. And this is where Chasing Justice wants to take a look at this and see what is the justice for Molly. They've arrested someone who you can see there's a back and forth that he was an illegal alien who was here in this country illegally. Other people say he was here on a green card. And, you know, you got two sides of this. You got people who want to defend him, which I can't imagine that they're defending him. I think there's some GoFundMe page for this guy that's raised $115,000. This, I think, speaks to the sickness of the human mind. Here's a guy who murdered this young woman, and people are raising money for him because of, I'm going to guess, a political stance that they want to take. I don't know that that's the case. It's disturbing to me that they want to do that, that people are raising money for this guy as Molly is no longer with us and her family has to suffer that loss. So a lot that's come out about Molly and this murder, this horrible, senseless crime. I see people arguing on some of the networks, and they're saying that it's really not about illegal immigration, a topic we've talked about here many times on Chasing Justice. But here's my question and answer to them. If it's not about illegal immigration, taking for granted that this killer was here illegally, I don't care if he had a green card and he overstayed it when he should have left, or if he snuck across the border. Either one doesn't make a difference. He's here illegally. And they say it doesn't really matter. That's not the bigger picture. It's a shame that she was killed, but nothing to do with the immigration debate. Well, I'm going to take it down to a very, very personal level. Molly and her family. If that man, that killer, was not here illegally, would he have been able to stalk her up and down that road while she jogged? Would he have been able to take control of her if he wasn't here in the country? Would he have been able to stab her repeatedly and whatever else he did to her before she died? Would he be able to dump her body in a cornfield and cover it with corn stalks and leave her there with the indignity of laying in a field? Would he have been able to do that if he wasn't in the country at all? The answer is clear. Of course not. Molly would still be with us. Now, Molly's an individual person, and her life was important. Her life was important to her. Her life was important to her family, and her life was important to her God who put her here. Now, you can argue all you want about what we should do with illegal immigrants, about our immigration policy, how we should change it. Maybe we should have guest workers. All of that is ancillary to the fact that that young woman was murdered and she would still be alive today. None of us would even know her name. She'd just be going about her business and her life with her family if that killer had not been here illegally. So I don't care what they say. One life makes a difference. One life matters. Molly's life mattered. I think this points out the reality of the debate. Now we look at Kate Steinle, another young woman who was murdered in California. You know, the guy who did it was an illegal alien who'd been removed multiple times, and he came back. And he was found not guilty. You know, a little jury nullification there, I think, because the people in San Francisco where this happened, I think, are very, very far to the left. And unfortunately, they wanted the political point to be more important than the, you know, the inconsistency of some poor young woman getting killed by this guy. I find that horrific, ladies and gentlemen. I find that this case here, Molly Tibbetts' case, should end the discussion. It should completely end this discussion once and for all. We cannot have people here illegally because crimes are committed. Not all of them, not all of the people that come here are going to commit crimes and commit murders and rapes and this and that. But think of the thousands of victims who do suffer at the hands of illegal immigrants. And it would be inconsistent intellectually to say that if those people were not here in the country, those victims would not have to suffer. So are we to say that it's okay that American citizens have to suffer for the bigger picture of open borders and allowing everyone in? Let that sink in for a minute. Is it okay that American citizens, even if the numbers are not gigantic, if it's one innocent young 20-year-old woman from Iowa, from the heartbeat of America, to be dragged off the street, murdered, and dumped in a cornfield? Is there justice for Molly? There's not. I can only imagine her last few moments, the fear of what was happening to her. And we're to say that that's acceptable because for the bigger picture, we should allow everybody into this country that wants to come. And for anybody out there that's sitting there and say, well, there's murders every day by Americans, so that doesn't make a difference. You are part of the problem. Crime is always with us. We know that. But when you take it down to the individual level, to the individual person, yes, Americans will kill each other. It does happen. We saw this disgusting human being who killed his wife and his two daughters and dumped them in an oil field. There's no justice for them, no matter what they do to that guy. And I'm not saying it's better because they were all American and he killed them. It's horrible that it happened. But the reality is, if we didn't let some people in, if we removed other people that shouldn't be here, Molly and lots of other people would not be victimized. That's the truth. This case makes the last and final argument for it. And I don't know how we can look at it any other way. I'm an open-minded person. I think you've listened to me for the past several months. You understand I'm an open-minded person. I understand why people come here. And I know that most of the people that are coming here illegally are coming for a better life. I get it. Doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it right. And most of us who sit back and see this, we are going to be trampled coming November. We're going to be trampled by people who do not see things the way we do, who do not see the murder of Molly Tibbetts and Kate Steinle and the thousands of other people who have been victimized. They're not important. And you know why? Because you and I are too busy. A lot of you out there that are listening to me that believe very strongly in what we're talking about, you're not going to go vote. The left is energized. We've seen in some of these races, in Ohio, in a very, very traditional Republican district, the statistic came out the other day, 87% of Democrats came out to vote and 40% of Republicans. If we let that happen, we are going to give up everything that we want to move forward with. You know, President Trump, you can like him or not like him. He says some things that are uncomfortable for people to say. He says some things that are crude. He's a regular man. He's not trying to be a politician. He's a regular man, and like all of us, he is prone to saying something stupid, making a comment that's inartful, to borrow a term from Governor Cuomo in New York. But the reality is, if we don't get out there and vote, if we do not get energized, those of us who believe on the right, that there are bigger things for our nation to be concerned about, if we don't get energized and get out there, we are going to lose our country. I've talked about the crossroad, and I've said we reached the crossroad, and we've chosen a path. Well, in November 2016, we made a slight correction in that path. Not to hate people, not to take things back to the 1940s, as a lot of our opponents will say we're trying to do, but to put America back on the path of following the Constitution, of using that guiding document that changed the world to help our country move forward so that everyone can move ahead. We have learned a lot. We have evolved a lot. It's not the 1940s. It's not 1867. We understand in 2018, 2019, 2020, and going ahead, that yes, we had some sins in the past, and we're trying to move past them. But there's a lot of people out there that won't let us move past them because it creates a business for them, it creates a life for them, it creates an argument for them, it creates motivation for them to go out and vote and to stay in power. So this is where we're at. We only have, 2 months? September, October? And then November 6th, legions of Americans are going to go out and pull the lever for their local congressman and senator and governor and whatever else, whoever else is running. And if we, who are on the right, are not part of that throng of people going out there and making our voices heard, we're going to give up that correction that we made November 2016. We're going to give up our Constitution, we're going to give up our borders, we're going to give up our way of life. Some people think it might be better going socialist because this is where we are now on a trajectory for. It is crystal clear in all the polls that we see. 57% of our Democratic friends believe that socialism is a valid answer, better than capitalism. That's 57%. Young people under the age of 30 believe that socialism is a legitimate form of government better than capitalism. Young people have no idea what socialism really is because we've lost our schools years ago. We all complain that the schools are left-wing bastions that indoctrinate our kids, don't really teach them. And that's exactly what they've become. So our kids don't really understand about the Constitution. All they know is these evil old white men back in the day did horrible things to everybody. And I'm gonna grant them there were some bad things that were done, absolutely. But I'm also gonna say they created a foundation to change those bad things. And over the years, we have changed those things and we're continuing to change those things. We're continuing to be enlightened and to move towards our better selves. But we don't do that by going backwards. We don't do that by giving up our Constitution by giving up our democratic republic. We do not do that by giving in to those who their system, if we follow it, look around the world. There is a million examples, and of course a million is not correct, but you know what I'm saying. There are plenty of examples. Every time socialism is used, it doesn't work out well in the end for people. You end up scrounging around for toilet paper and eating your pets. And I know that's a dramatic thing to say. And for people that point to some of the European countries that have gone socialist and, oh, it's so perfect there. Look how everyone has everything. You have to look at those populations, the size of those countries, how they control them. In a country like America, you cannot go socialist. You cannot do it. Or you're not going to have America. The page of history is going to turn. The page of history is going to turn, and America is going to be a memory in the rearview mirror. It was a one-time miracle of humanity when our forefathers got together and pledged themselves and everything else to this new idea. It is that big, ladies and gentlemen. This is that moment. We're here again. You know, I never thought in my lifetime we would get to the point that we would reach a place where the forefathers were. But we are. They came to that moment and they made decisions and choices that created the country, that changed the paradigm of life for humanity. We, us, all of us, are now at that exact same moment again. Our choices this November are going to determine which way we go. And if you look at it that way, we are just like the forefathers. We are at a particular moment in time when things are going to change. And I'll tell you, if it starts to go too far to the left, which it almost is already, we are not going to be able to bring it back. This is the lesson of history. The American experiment will be just that, an experiment that came and went. And as I have said in my articles and everything else, the default position of humanity is to live under tyranny, live under the strong man, live under the dictator. Historically, that is what we have done as a race, as human beings. We live under that strong person. And if we give up our America, we give up our Constitution, we're running right back to our default position. So don't let it happen. Molly, rest in peace. I hope your family finds peace and we'll pray for you. John McCain, rest in peace. Aretha Franklin, rest in peace. And everyone else we lost from all our families and friends, may they all rest in peace and the loving God look over our country. Because you know what? We need it right now. Get out and vote. This is Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. We'll be back in a minute.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Bing, 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 round two here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, today we have the neighborhood fellas are here again, and we have Race Car Jack, All-American Rock and Roll Jack. Jack, how are you today?
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Excellent. And with us is our contrarian, always full of smiles and good thoughts, but boy, he will be contrarian on anything that you say to him. Jim, how are you today?
Hello, Joe. Hello, Jack. How are you all?
Thank you.
That's excellent, fellas. Just so everybody knows, we're going to throw some pictures up on the website this week on AmericaOutLoud.com, so you can see what Race Car Jack and Jim the Contrarian look like. We don't have our good buddy here, our man of faith. Bill Dallas is not here this week. I think he's in church praying, which is good. And he's going to pray for all of us here in the neighborhood because Lord knows we need it.
We need it.
So, fellas, some of the things in my opening that we talked about, things that are going on in the world, we want to kind of touch base and see how people in the neighborhood feel about it. But I want everybody to know at home that this is also Poor Paws Weekend here at Chasing Justice in the Neighborhood. We have a
beautiful, mostly lab mix, would you say, Jim? Mostly
yes.
A lab?
Yeah.
1-year-old beautiful Delaney is here with us, and she's on her way home right now. So when you hear the commotion, the cacophony of dog barking that's going to take place here on Chasing Justice in the next few minutes, that'll be Arthur, our rescue that we kept, and Delaney, who we're trying to find a home for. So you're prepared. All right, so going on out in the world out there, let's talk about obviously the loss of Senator John McCain, an American military man who spent time in a Hanoi prison, very, very famous. Apparently, the stories come out from both sides. And Jim, you said it earlier when we were talking, I don't want to speak ill of the dead. So even in my opening, I talked about John McCain. He gave service to our country. He protected us. He did serve in a prisoner of war camp. And he was a United States Senator. So he served in two different ways our country. And unfortunately, he died from a terrible brain disease. What are we thinking about Senator McCain?
Well, you know, my feelings on it are this. I've listened to a lot of stuff that's been on TV, and most of it has been quite pleasant. There has been some dissension, some people talking about some of the things that he did or was accused of doing. That wasn't quite savory. At this point in time, I think we ought to just honor his life, honor his service, most definitely, both in the government and in the military, and let him rest. Let the family have closure and let them rest too, without having to field a bunch of questions about a bunch of nonsense that is practically meaningless now that he's passed.
Okay, Jack, good point.
I would have to agree with Jack, and I don't want to speak ill of the man. I mean, I do honor his service. I do honor him as a human being. And, you know, I obviously have sympathy for the family. It must be difficult. And I'll leave it at that. I will say that I believe that John McCain was part of the deep state. And his service, especially in the later part of his years in the Senate, was not good for the American people.
Okay, I think that's fair enough. I think anytime we look at anybody's life, all of us, we are all open to the reality that we're a duality, if not a multiplicity. We have many parts of our personality, and your opinions change over time. What you believed at 20, you don't believe at 40, you may not believe at 60. So I appreciate your opinions, and I would like to say to the McCain family out there, because I know they're listening, like everybody else in America listening to Chasing Justice, is here in the neighborhood, we're very sorry for your loss. Now, we lost somebody else, an American icon, in the last week or so. We lost Aretha Franklin. Now, Aretha Franklin was a singer from the time she was 14 years old. She was absolutely amazing. But the songs that this woman brought to the country, part of our culture, are long-lived. And I think that will last forever. And it's funny, I saw a thing. She died, and then all of a sudden her record sales pick up. Because people start to talk about her, you forget about who they are until all of a sudden these icons pass, and we go back and look at their history and go, wow, this was great, and we're reminiscent. So I always liked, and I'll spell it correctly. I know Reverend Al Sharpton had a little problem with his spelling. I will spell it R-E-S-P-E-C-T is how the song is actually goes. But any of you guys ever listen to Aretha Franklin? Do you like her music?
Absolutely. I mean, she was an American icon, a president. Had her and said she was a national treasure.
I agree with that.
Her songs are iconic. They're used in everything from advertising all the way down to sitcoms. She's been in so many movies. For anyone to have a career that lasted as long as that woman's career lasted, it's just an amazing thing. And the music that she produced was wonderful. Her voice was so powerful. I don't think she actually turned the microphone on.
Yeah. I heard a story the other day, and I wish I could remember who it was, but it was maybe Barry Gordy, and I probably got that wrong. But he was going over to Aretha Franklin's father's house on some musical mission, something that they were doing over there. And he walked in, and he heard this voice, and he heard this singing, and he said, "Who is that?" And it was his 14-year-old daughter, young Aretha, sitting at the piano. And he said, "She was Aretha Franklin from the time she was 14 till the day she died. That voice and that power and that skill was just evident in her whole entire life." So I think that's awesome.
In church.
Yeah, she was a church singer, where lots of kids start. You know, I know here in my church, and we all have, you know, we have the young people, or sometimes older people get up and they sing, you know, during church, especially for those who don't know, during the Catholic service, there's lots of singing, lots of standing up, lots of sitting down, standing up, sitting down. But there's a lot of singing involved. And some of the singers are really very good. Some of them are the top end of amateur. They're pretty good. There's a girl in our church here at St. Dominic, and I have categorized her voice as a Disney voice. This girl is so good and so powerful that you sit there and you listen to her sing, and she has such a unique sound. She sounds like a Disney princess singing, like you could put her into one of those roles, and it would be amazing. So Aretha Franklin was that way, and I think we say...
I would like to add, you know, you look at the music industry today.
There we go.
Recent, yeah. And in Hollywood, they're an embarrassment. They're an embarrassment to America. They're an embarrassment to traditional values. Aretha Franklin, what I know of her, she was an American icon, and I respected her for who she was. She was, appeared to me, from what I know, she's a good person who was doing the right thing, and she happened to be a tremendous singer.
Jim, I think that's a beautiful tribute, and that's anything anybody we would hope to be is a good person here in America. Doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, the color of your skin, the religion, be a good person. And I think that that makes America a great place. So in the background, you hear our poor paws boy Arthur there starting to bark. I think that's because Delaney is probably going to be home. And I'm just giving you a heads up. I can try and stop and pause and use the cough button, but it ain't going to work. It's going to be a cacophony. And if you're ever thinking about getting a dog, get a rescue. That's my moment to say this. These dogs are so beautiful. And a lot of them are in kill shelters. All the dogs we get that we foster here are in kill shelters. If we didn't take them and find them homes, these dogs would be put down. And they're beautiful animals. They're really wonderful companions. Arthur has become a full part of our family. So if you want to get a dog, go look at the local shelter. Get one of them dogs. They're beautiful. There's tons of them. So we apologize in advance for that. So those are our two iconic people that we lost. And in my opening, one of the things I talked about was another loss. Another loss of a regular person, a person like us, a person like all of us listening out there. This is Molly Tibbetts, and we spoke about Molly a few weeks ago on this very show when we still didn't know the fate of this young lady. And it's come out in the past week or so that her remains were found in a cornfield, dumped in a horrific fashion, and corn stalks thrown on top of this young girl, 20-year-old, beautiful young woman who had the whole world ahead of her. Which is horrific enough that such a thing would happen in our country to anyone. Kid out jogging, and she ends up dead in a cornfield. Well, we find out that the person that killed her, and it doesn't make a difference, really, that the fact that she was killed is the worst thing. Let's be clear about that. But the reality is the person that killed her is reported to be an illegal alien. And in my opening, what I talked about was the reality is if that guy wasn't allowed in this country, that one victim, Molly Tibbetts, would still be alive today. She'd be with her family and with her boyfriend.
And if that one victim was your daughter or your sister or your grandchild, it would mean so much more to you than how you're feeling about it right now as far as the person that did this crime being an illegal alien. There's been a fund set up to defend this person, I understand, and... if this child, this girl, this woman, was related to you in any sense, you would feel differently about supporting this person. You would start to change your mind about open borders. That's for certain.
I have a different take. The person who killed Molly Tibbetts was not an individual. It was the United States Congress. They're complicit in the murder of not only Molly Tibbetts, but the woman in San Francisco.
Kate Steinle.
Steinle. And all the other people that are being killed every day by allowing illegals to come into this country. And we know they did it in the Cuban rescue when they emptied their prisons. Mm-hmm. And they sent all their mentally ill people right to America, so it became our problem.
And it's happening here. I can attest to that. As a former Florida resident with friends and family still in that state, when that did occur, it was a travesty.
Yes. And, you know, and that's not the Cuban people. They are good, solid Americans.
No.
It was the Mariel Boatlift when they emptied their prisons out and brought
them
here.
And it's the same reason why our president right now wants to interview the people who wish to come to this country so that we can get quality people into the country, people
sure.
that we need, people that would be respectful and need to be in this country because of religious persecution.
Well, not only that, they're people that we need. If we need engineers, bring in engineers. If we need people to do other jobs, bring in those people. I have no problem with a day worker program where they come across, they work, they get paid, it'll help their families, and then they go back. But people just to come illegally is not good, and Molly Tibbetts paid the price for what we as a people have not stood up for.
When I was a young person in Florida, I picked oranges at my friend's orange grove, and we were there for over a week, every single day, picking oranges from sun up to way past sundown. And I worked with all what they were called migrants at the time. Mm-hmm. What they were is they were people with work visas who, mm-hmm. who were allowed to come and pick fruit, much like they do in California and other places. They did this in Florida. And there were no issues. These were good people who came here to work. And I don't respect anybody any more than I respect people who want to come to this country, because I believe it's the best country.
It is.
For them to work and be American citizens and enjoy everything that we have here.
But do it right.
And we still have to bring them at a level, bring foreigners in at a level where they can assimilate into the prevailing culture.
That's correct.
We cannot transplant the American culture with other cultures because it becomes too difficult and it becomes problematic.
But do you believe, Jim, that it is better for the United States and the corporations that are based here to build plants in Mexico, in other regions of the of South America, Central America, to improve their economy so they have a reason to stay there? Or do you believe that we should pull them out?
No, to a certain extent, yes. I do agree that there's a benefit to that. And I don't mind people coming into this country, but it should be a merit-based system. And we should evaluate. It's not going to be perfect. No system's ever perfect. You're still going to have some bad apples getting in. Or some people get in who turn into bad apples. But for the most part, if it's a merit-based system and they come here to work, they come here to be Americans, they don't come here to live free off the system. And that is the big difference between immigration of today versus the immigration of yesteryear. Nobody I knew at the turn of the century came in here to live off the American system.
There was no system to live off. They
had to work. You're absolutely right.
You had to have a sponsor that said they would take care of you and make sure you were fed and clothed. And Jack, to go to your point, I think this points up one of the very, very positives of President Trump is that they're going to build these factories in South America. Now people have work, but the deal has to be fair to ship those cars back ship those products back here. And this is what he's trying to say. Let's have open markets. Let's be able to sell our stuff everywhere and bring that stuff back.
So many people right now have a problem with the steel and aluminum tariffs against China. Now, the point being this, if we have a restoration of the steel industry in this country, the amount of jobs that were provided in the state of Pennsylvania alone, thousands upon thousands of people depended upon Bethlehem and Pittsburgh Steel, mm-hmm. along with all the subsidiary companies that supplied everything that they used, oils and a dirty word, coal, to fuel the plants to make the steel. The trucking industry certainly benefited greatly from it. It was the economic engine almost entirely of the state.
Absolutely. And you see now they just said they're putting $750 million into a couple of plants in western Pennsylvania to revitalize that industry. So why should they be able to dump their steel here cheap when we can't send our stuff to them? This is what people don't seem to understand.
I can't keep paying you.
Right. If I have something to sell and you want to buy it, then well, let's sell it to each other. But don't tell me I got to get charged an extra $14 for you to buy my product.
Almost every single region on the planet, if we could just get together, which is something they discussed in the 60s, but it didn't seem to go over. Almost every single country on this earth has something that another country and or we need, and we have something that they need. Whether it be food, durable goods, what have
fuel,
you.
Fuel, whatever.
Fuel, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Everybody has something, and we need to get on a level playing field. And I believe that's what the president is trying right now.
I think you're right. Go ahead, Jim.
There's another category of immigrants that we haven't spoke about. and that is the refugee, the asylum seeker.
Right.
I believe that there's a new group that we need to invite into this country. Those are the white South African farmers who are having their land taken away from them by communists. And that's exactly what's happening in South Africa at this present time. Just look at the leader. He wears a red beret, he has a red jacket, and he's a communist. And I feel bad for South Africa, because once they institute those policies, you mark my words, just like Venezuela, just like the killing fields of Cambodia, once they institute those policies, that country is going to suffer. And it will be everyone in that country. And of course, they'll try to blame someone else. But Putin has offered the farmers land in Russia. And I think that America should do the same.
Now you bring up the fact that they're white farmers. For people who don't understand the dichotomy of what's going on there, is that for years, the white population controlled the black population.
That's correct.
And then Mandela came along, Nelson Mandela, and there was a great revolution, and the Africans took over, the black Africans took over control of their country. And now they are doing the same things to the white population that the white population did to them, which in any way, it's wrong for anyone to treat anybody that way.
There was one little difference. Mandela, even though he did a good thing, he was supported by, and that's what the Communist Party does. They find a social inequality, a social injustice, and they fuel the unrest. And unfortunately, Mandela dies, and what does South Africa become? It becomes a communist country, and they're going to suffer the consequences of tyranny.
So, fellas, this has been quite a go-around here in the neighborhood today. Each one of these topics could be one of their own. I'm going to leave with the last couple of seconds, and I'm going to go back to Molly for a second, and your point, Jim, about who is responsible for this man who killed her. The man, first of all, is responsible for committing that murder, but the bigger picture is this, and I don't say this very lightly. The people, our friends on the left, are quick to point out everything that they think is wrong with the right and blame the right for everything in the world. I'm going to say very strongly, there are blood on the hands of anyone who wants these open borders. Molly Tibbetts is one person. She is not the whole situation, but the reality is she's somebody's daughter, and she's now dead because of the policies that allowed this to happen. We need to fix our immigration policies. And if you don't agree with that, I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, there's blood on your hands. So hey, we're back with round three here in Chasing Justice.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome to round three here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. For a couple minutes, I just want to talk about my sponsors, The Blue Magazine, the voice of law enforcement, www.thebluemagazine.com. I want to thank everybody out there across the country who has been signing on to their webpage for the Blue Magazine and reading the articles. It's been fantastic to hear. I hear from the magazine people that they're getting click-ins and people checking in from all over the country. So thank you. It's a great magazine. If you're involved with law enforcement, it's something you want to read. It's really great. A-plus technology and security. I talk about A-plus all the time. They have some fantastic equipment. Are you having a problem somewhere of vaping? You know, vaping has become this big thing in high schools. If you got a problem with vaping, A-plus technology from Long Island, they just came up with this brand new piece of equipment, proprietary, that they created themselves. It's called the Halo. It looks like a smoke detector. You put it in the ceiling, it detects smoke and chemicals and all kinds of other things.
but it detects vaping. It also has glass break technology and gunshot technology. You could send emails to people from your system. It's fantastic. So it's A-plus technology and security. So you want to find them at aplustechnology.com. Go take a look at what they got. It's unbelievable. And our friends at MCON IT, another IT group, they are data recovery, third-party data recovery, save your computers, save all kinds of things. Take a look at MCONIT.com, E-M-C-O-N-I-T.com. Fantastic. And then there's my company, jpangaro.com, and we are transitioning now to True Security Design. This is the big parent company that is now going to be housing jpangaro.com, and we still do our police school and training for everybody out there in the world. So take a look, jpangaro.com, and we can certainly come to a town near you. So those are our sponsors. Take a look at them. Click on, say hi. And Chasing Justice has a Facebook page. You can pop on there and say hi, and we'll talk to each other. So here we go with round three. And I'm going to kind of follow this theme that we talked about when it comes with justice and these the murder of individuals. Now, this is more along the lines of, for my law enforcement friends and for those of you who like law enforcement, I'm going to tell you a couple of stories about how things in an interview can change rapidly. And I also want to talk about a crime scene thing that I think investigators would understand, and I want to pass this on to everybody here. Recently, I had an opportunity, and I was in Amityville, Long Island. Now, we know Amityville, Long Island is the scene of the movie, The Amityville Horror, and what that was all about. And if you go back and you research it, you find out it was a young man named Ronnie DeFeo who got up in the middle of the night one night, took a rifle, and shot and killed his brothers and sisters and his mother and father in a beautiful home on the water in Amityville, New York. Well, it was shortly thereafter that the DeFeo family, obviously, the house was sold by the estate or whoever. Ronnie was found guilty of the murders. And another family moved in. And that family are the ones that the story was written about, that the house was haunted. It was horrific, and the movie was very, very popular. But it was an amazing thing that, you heard about this story, and it was right there in Long Island, you know, the Amityville Horror. The movie's been remade a couple of times. Well, I had an opportunity to be in Amityville very recently, and the person I was working with, I said, hey, where is that Amityville house? Is it still around? They said, oh, yeah, the house is still around. It's been sold at least one other time from the family that were in there that wrote the story. And now I think currently it's a rental home. I think you can rent it if you want to go to Long Island. It's a beautiful little place, Amityville. Very nice community. And I said, well, where's the house? And he says, well, it's two blocks from here. I said, two blocks? Well, we got to go over and take a look. So we rode over and we took a look at the house. And it was interesting. They changed the windows. If you ever look up the story, The Amityville Horror, you'll see a picture of the house from the road. And it's the house is sideways to the road that they always show the pictures of. The front door of the house is on a side street, and the picture of the house that you always see is facing the street. And the windows, the iconic windows in the top of this Dutch colonial, were semicircular windows, and they gave the impression that they were eyes, and that's how they built those houses back then. Well, those windows were removed by the next owners. They took them out to try and change the look of the place. They put a fence around it. Apparently, as you can imagine, they had lots and lots of gawkers, you know, people coming around to look at the house. I was one of them this past week. I went to take a look. I've tried to be very respectful, pull up, take a look, you know, snap my picture, and then move on. And of course, things have quieted down over the years. It's been well over 20 years since that scene. But I think a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about crime scenes, and I said, you want to let the scene speak to you. This is a criminal investigator's little tip. And I had a really great detective clue me that in when I went into the detective bureau. Jeff Layton, who was my sergeant in the detective bureau. I was out investigating burglaries, investigating all kinds of stuff. And Jeff said to me one time, you have to let the scene speak to you. Because the scene will speak to you. You'll see things when you're calm. So the thing is, you go in and you process your scene, you take your fingerprints, you talk to all the witnesses, you gather up any evidence. But before you leave the scene, as though you're done, you put all your stuff away in your car, you take a minute, you take a deep breath, and you just walk the scene, outside, inside, and you let the scene speak to you. And he says, and you will find things that you missed the first time around. So I started doing this. I would finish my crime scene work, I would back up, and I would just walk around the property and I would look. And I can't tell you how many times I did find things. Things that you wouldn't necessarily be looking for in your original search, like pieces of stuff that people dropped, some of the stolen property. As they were running away, they dropped something and you see that it goes towards the woods and you find a trail. We did a crime scene at, believe it or not, at a Dunkin' Donuts. There was a series of burglaries at Dunkin' Donuts. And my partner and I showed up after the original team of detectives were there and we just walked the scene. And in the back of the lot, I found, sticking out of about 8-foot chain link fence, a single-dollar bill flapping in the breeze. Well, we looked at that, and for whatever reason, on the other side was some swampy woods, and we hopped over the fence and we walked the trail. We saw some footprints, and there we found bags of burglary tools, and we found the proceeds. Because apparently the cops had disturbed the burglary, and the guys took off, and they couldn't carry these big bags of tools, and eventually they were captured. But the point was, if you let the scene speak to you, it will tell you things. So that's a tip for anybody who's a new detective or a new patrol officer out there. When you're all done taking your report, walk around. I found piles of cigarette butts in the street from burglaries, where if you stand in that spot, you can tell somebody was watching that house. So there's lots of things you can see. So Jeff Layton gave me that idea to let the scene speak to you. In the course of my career, I found that scenes speak to you in a different way also. Especially scenes of violence. Scenes of violence, there seems to be an echo of that violence that emanates from the scene. And what I mean by that is, if something very bad happened, there's a human energy that's in a place like that. And that energy doesn't go away. And if you listen for it, if you pay attention for it, if you feel it out, and I don't mean this in a mystical way, I mean, if you just sit there and listen to it, you can feel and hear that energy. So here I am at the Amityville Horror House. And I'm not talking about, you know, the story part about the devils and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about the crime scene. And here I am standing there looking at this house. And like I said, it's a beautiful home, right on the water. It's, you know, little inlets and canals and stuff. Absolutely beautiful, well cared for homes. And this place is beautiful. And I'm looking at it. And I'm looking up at the windows, and I just let the scene speak to me. And I could see the flashes of gunfire, because that echo of that violence that took place in that house, for whatever reason that it took place in that house, it's still there. That moment is only separated by the years. Other than that, it was still there. I could feel the energy of what happened there. And I found it strange. Which relates me back to a case that I handled. In 2004, we had some, you know, a beautiful area of town, and we had a family that was living there. And I'm going to make up a name. We're going to say the name's the Johnson family. And the Johnson family were mildly connected to organized crime. The grandfather, years ago, used to be a made member of one of the New York families, and he handled all the gambling down here at the Jersey Shore. His son was what they called a bagman. A bagman would go around and collect all the money and pay off all the gambling for the family. And then his son, Don Johnson Jr., Don Johnson wasn't allowed to be part of the family business because Don Johnson, he liked to dabble in drugs and he was untrustworthy. So he was not allowed to be a part of the family business. Well, myself and my fellow cops had arrested Don Johnson Jr., many, many times on drug-related activities. We arrested the father, Don Johnson, on gambling. We did quite a few big gambling cases with the dad, so we were all familiar with each other. They knew the cops knew them, and we kind of figured, you know, we would meet many times for the rest of my career. Well, we're all sitting in the bureau one morning having our coffee, getting ready to start the day, or doing our 8:30 briefing. And about 9 o'clock in the morning, on a warm, beautiful morning, we hear over the police radio, the dispatch send patrol cars. A caller says there are two dead bodies in a house. and they're responding, and they give out the address, 305 Main Street. We all recognize that address as being the Johnson home, and we're figuring, uh-oh, two dead bodies. Well, we know that Don Johnson Jr. was involved with narcotics, so we figured probably an overdose, probably two dead guys laying in the bedroom, and mom or dad came down and found them down there dead. So we hear patrols responding, and we're listening, and of course, we're the day shift detectives. We start gathering up our crime scene gear because you know you're going to get dispatched to that call. Once the patrols get there, you know they're going to see what they see, and they're going to call for detectives to come out and take a look at the scene. So we start packing our stuff up, and we get out to our cars, and we're heading over. It's about a 10-minute ride to the house, and I can hear on the radio, you hear the first set of guys arrive. These were plainclothes narcotics guys, and they roll up. Then you hear a patrol sergeant roll up and then a couple other cars. Well, it was only about a minute or so later that we heard the patrol sergeant get on the air and say, "It's confirmed. We have two dead bodies in the house. Send me the detectives." So now it's a little more serious, you know, because an overdose would be send the detectives. There was just something in his voice. Send the detectives. It's confirmed. So here we go. We go racing over there and we get to the house, and it's a big house, 5-bedroom house, you know, in a nice neighborhood. And we go in, and actually the suspect had walked out the front door, and he was confronted by one of the plainclothes detectives who were there, the narcotics guys that he went to high school with. And he walks out, and this guy, this suspect, is covered in blood and bits of bone and chunks of meat all over this guy. I mean, he looked like he went through a slaughterhouse. And the detective says to him, "Oh my gosh, what happens there, Don Johnson?" And he says, "I killed her." So the detective does the right thing. He grabs and puts him in a police car because, you know, we don't know what we got right now, but he puts this guy in a police car. We go into the house, and in the house we find a young woman in her early 30s, which is the killer's common law wife. She's dead. Her head, her hands, and her feet were cut off, and she was stabbed multiple times. On a first floor landing in the living room, we found the killer's grandmother, who was in her 80s, advanced into her 80s, 80 years of life. She was laying dead on the floor. She had her head, her hands, and her feet cut off. And it was a shocking scene, as you can imagine. So over the next couple of days, the process was clear. We took the suspect into headquarters. We questioned him repeatedly. And it was interesting, because I had known this person and had arrested him before, you know, under other circumstances, drug-related. Myself and there was a detective from the county prosecutor's office, and we were both in on the interview, and we read the guy Miranda. And all the whole time, he initialed his initials, DJ, Don Johnson, Don Johnson, Don Johnson. He signed the bottom, Don Johnson. And we start talking to him. And basically he says, "I could tell you what happened, but I can't tell you why. I could tell you what happened, but I can't tell you why." And this was clear to me that he was probably in shock. I mean, here's a guy that just killed two people and chopped them up. I mean, I could see, you know, crime of passion. Somebody gets upset, they get angry, and they strike out, and you kill somebody. And killing somebody with a knife is a very personal way to kill somebody. It's really a terrible and gruesome way to go. But for him to say, "I can tell you what happened, but not why," told me that he's in shock, and he can't really talk about this. So he asked to lay down. We let him lay down. He wanted to come out and talk again. We did Miranda again. And again, he signed Don Johnson, Don Johnson, Don Johnson. At the end, he signed his name. And he really was having a hard time coming to terms with what he did. He gave us a little more information. And then I asked him a question that I thought was a pretty good one. I needed some kind of an admission because I thought any moment he might ask for an attorney or he might decide, you know, he's done. And I said, "Listen, do you like your neighbors?" And he looked at me with a funny, he goes, "Yes, I love my neighbors. They're great people." And I said, "Okay, well, right now they're panicking out there. They're running around pulling their kids out of school, locking their doors, thinking there's somebody running around killing people." And he says, no, just me. I'm the only one they need to worry about. There's nobody else out there." Which I thought was a great answer because that confirmed to me that while he wasn't saying, "By the way, I did the murders," he was saying it was just him. He was the concern. So I thought at least I would have something if I had to go to trial with that. So we end up talking to him, and again, he wants to lay down. And this is the crux of you never know what people are going to say. So I walk him in, put him in the cell, and I know him. I said, listen, Don, Don had a young boy, a young son, who was probably 6 or 7 years old. I said, listen, all of this aside, I know you're having a hard time with this. Your son's going to want to know why you killed his mother. At some point, he's going to want to know that question. And the guy started crying. It wasn't too long later, he asked for a Bible, which we gave him a Bible. And then a few minutes later, he stands up, waves at the camera, and he says, I'm ready to talk to you now. And we come out, we're going to give him Miranda for the third time. We read him Miranda, only this time, now he signs it JC, 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 and at the end, he signs it Jesus Christ. And we said, Don, what's this all about? And he says, well, I'm Jesus Christ, and my house is the gateway to hell, and my grandmother was a demon, and so was my girlfriend, and as Jesus, I had to kill them. And that's what I did. So I killed them. I cut their heads and hands and feet off, and I destroyed them utterly and totally. Now, that was amazing. It was an admission to the crime. He went 2 years claiming to be Jesus. He went to trial saying he was Jesus, and he ended up finding himself getting found guilty. But the thing is that one question that I asked him, what are you going to tell your kid? And he thought quickly, and he came up with his answer, and then he stuck with it. So you never know. People fall back on this religion thing all the time where they say, oh, it's God or it's the devil or somebody made me do it. But it's interesting, the questions you can ask people, the things that you can say, you have to pay attention to those answers and be careful how you ask the questions. So that's our story today, ladies and gentlemen, here on Chasing Justice. Have a great week, and remember, let's say a prayer for Molly Tibbetts and all the others we lost this week and for all the victims everywhere. Because on Chasing Justice, that's what we care about. We're out there to do the right thing by the public we serve. So remember, don't be a part of the problem, be a part of the solution. And we'll see you next week on Chasing Justice.